All right. So my name is Cliff Ravenscraft from Cincinnati, Ohio, / Northern Kentucky. And then I would like to say, aprende inglés gratis con mencioninglés.com y inglespodcast.com.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig, episode 70. If you are a new listener, welcome. If this is your first time with us, I'm Craig.
And I'm Reza. Hello.
And we're going to help you improve your English and take it to the next level. In this episode, we'll be speaking about urban living. That's vocabulary and expressions connected to living in a city or a town. But first, I think we have some feedback, Reza.
Yes, we got some feedback from Surfer Lobo on
surfer
iTunes.
Surfer Lobo. Like
Surfer Lobo.
Wolf Surfer.
Wolf Surfer, yeah. From Chile. And it was left on iTunes. I'll read it out. It's in Spanish. Este podcast es lo mejor que he escuchado. Thank you.
Thank you.
Los profesores hablan muy bien. Se entiende perfecto lo que dicen. Y además son muy simpáticos. Thank you. Y eso hace que sus clases sean muy entretenidas. Me reí por montones cuando un profesor habló en inglés, pero con acento español. Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. And we got 5 stars from Surfer Lobo. Thank you very much, Surfer Lobo.
Thank you. And if you'd like to leave us a review and some stars on iTunes, we would really appreciate it because that means that more people get to notice us and listen to Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig. So let's look at some vocabulary, Reza. Where people live. Now, there are many different words in English to describe people's places of residence. Can you think of any?
I live in a flat in Valencia.
You do too. I do too.
But when I was in Belfast, I lived in a house, like most people there.
Mm-hmm.
So a house is not the same as a flat. Piso, flat, house, casa.
And flat is a very British English word. What do the Americans say for flat?
They would probably say an apartment.
Yeah.
And how would you describe the building which contains all the flats, the one building?
The whole building with all the flats together.
Yeah.
Well, in British English, I would say a block of flats, a block of flats. And in American English, an apartment block.
Now, in the UK, there are some people who live in flats, but the majority of people actually live in a house. And there are different types of houses. My house in Belfast was a terraced house. A terrace, that's T-E-R-R-A-C-E-D, terraced. That means there's a line or a row of houses, let's say 5, 6, or it could even be 10, 15 or 20 houses in one line, all joined together side by side. It's a terraced house. It's very typical in England and Ireland.
Now, my sister and brother-in-law, they lived in a terraced house before they came to live in Spain. They lived in a terraced house in London near West Ham's football ground, actually, in Plasto. And, yeah, terraced house is joined both sides, isn't it? Está conectado los dos lados.
Apart from the lucky person who gets to live at the end. Because there has to be an end, then they've got one end free. But everyone else in the middle, yes, has neighbours on either side.
But don't forget, if you're connected both sides, it's kind of insulation. So in the winter, the house at the end of the street or the end of the row is probably the coldest because
That's
it's
true.
Not protected.
I hadn't thought of that.
From
That's
the
true.
Weather, which is very important in the UK.
My house was in the middle, so we had the insulation.
Yeah, my sister's was too.
I was going to say that, of course, there are other types of houses. What if there are two houses side by side, but no more than two, just two?
So, yeah, I lived in a house like this when I grew up in London. So one side of the house was attached to the neighbour. One wall was attached to the neighbour, but the other side wasn't. There was just a garage and nothing. There was a gap, a space before the next house. And these houses are called semi-detached because half of the house is attached and half of the house is detached.
Mm-hmm. So then you could work out, listeners, that a house on its own, which doesn't share any wall with any neighbouring house, is detached.
A detached house. And they're usually more expensive, aren't they?
Yeah.
Because they have a garden and everything. Now, going back to flats, if you're very lucky and you live in an expensive flat at the top of the building, it's usually very spacious, very big, and very expensive. It's called a penthouse or a penthouse apartment or flat. I've never lived in a penthouse.
No, me neither. I don't know if I've ever been in one.
Now, a condo or condominium. Not sure what that is, actually.
It's a very American thing, isn't it? Very American. For me, it's a place where you live in America, which will be a private house, but with some shared facilities. For example, there might be a small apartment block of flats, and in the middle, perhaps a swimming pool, for example, which all the neighbors share.
Or a communal garden that you share with your neighbors.
That would be a condo, a condominium. So it's they're individual houses or flats with some shared facilities.
Other houses, there's a kind of house that only has one level or one floor, solo un piso. It's a house, but it just has one level, no upstairs, no rooms upstairs. That's called a bungalow.
Yes, and it's important to point out that the translation of the word bungalow is not bungalow, which is a Spanish word. There is a Spanish word, bungalow.
So what does that mean in Spanish then?
I'm not quite sure. I just know it's a false friend. In a Spanish bungalow can have two levels.
Right.
It can. But in English, no. In English, a bungalow specifically has one level. You cannot call a building with two levels a bungalow. In Spanish, you don't use the word that way.
Have you heard of the slang expression to call a person a bungalow?
No.
Somebody who's not clever, who's a bit stupid, a bit thick, you can say he's a bungalow or he's a bit of a bungalow. There's nothing upstairs. Nothing in nada en la cabeza.
Nothing upstairs.
Nothing upstairs.
I get it.
The lights are on, but nobody's home. A farmhouse... is obviously a house in the country where there is a farm. So a farmhouse is, what would you say in Spanish? Casa de campo.
Yeah, something like that, yes.
Farmhouse.
La casa de la granja, something like that, yeah.
Animals, chickens. How would you describe a cottage? Because I think the cottage exists in Spanish as well. I'm not sure if it has the same meaning. Cottage.
I don't think I could translate it. I would have to describe it. A cottage is a typical rural, not urban, rural building in the countryside of Britain or Ireland. We don't really think of many countries. We think of northern European countries for cottages. You don't think of a cottage in Spain.
Mm.
In Spain, the nearest equivalent would be a villa.
Or finca.
Yes or no, I disagree, no. Actually. For me, a finca, it implies that it has a lot of land around it. A cottage may or may not have land. A cottage could be on a road.
That's true.
So I don't see them as similar. For me, a villa is the closest thing in the Mediterranean, but it's not quite the same. When we think of a villa, we always think of the Mediterranean. When we think of a cottage, we think of England, Ireland, possibly France and a few other countries in Northern Europe.
Mm.
So it's like our version of a Spanish villa, let's say.
Do you remember years ago, those boxes of chocolates sometimes had a picture of a cottage on the chocolate box, and there'd be this beautiful, small, attractive house in the English countryside, maybe in a small village, with a thatched roof, which means a roof made of straw or paja.
Yeah.
And it's very attractive with flowers outside. That's my idea of a cottage.
Yes. Not typical at all of Spain where we are now.
Absolutely.
Or of South America either.
No. a very big, huge house with many, many rooms, usually expensive and very...
impressive, very imposing.
Impressive and imposing would be a mansion. Yeah. Mansion. A country mansion, perhaps.
Yeah. Craig, how would you say in English? I just feel like asking you to translate this. How would you say... Sorry, I beg your pardon. How would you say in Spanish, I beg your pardon, the English mansion? How would you say that in Spanish?
La mansión del inglés.
Oh, that sounds good. I like the sound of that. I like the sound of that. Yeah. It just happens to be one of the very best websites for learning English that there is.
If you don't know the mansion, La mansión del inglés, you can find it at mansioningles.com. Many free courses and recursos to help you improve your English.
It's like a mansion in the fact that it's very big and there are many different departments, many rooms. That's why it's mansión de inglés.
What it is not is tienda del inglés, which would be tent, mansion tent. So a tent is where you could live or sleep in the countryside or on a campsite. Remember the word campsite? It's not camping. Camping is the activity. In Spanish, you'd say un camping, but it's a campsite. It's the place where you would put up a tent.
Or you could live in a caravan out in the countryside.
You could. What's caravan in Spanish?
Isn't it caravana?
I think so. Yeah. I think
it's the same, yeah.
Caravan. The Americans would probably say mobile home.
Yeah.
Now, it's very common in the UK if you have a low income, perhaps if you're living on Social Security or you have a reason to pay low rent, if you're an elderly person with no family, if you're a one-parent family, then you get help from the government and it's possible that you live in something called a council house. A council house is a house with subsidized rent. And
well, Craig, I think that's quite a good description, but not all of us who were brought up in a council house fit that description, I would say.
Were you brought up in a council house?
And I wasn't brought up in a single parent family or on Social Security, but I get your point that a lot of people were.
Yeah, maybe that's a common preconception.
No, but it's true. I think originally, council houses were designed for people on low rents and social security benefits, etc. But these days, I'm not sure it's the case because, of course, a lot of council houses were sold to the occupants.
That's right. In fact, my nan lived on a council flat in the East End of London, and my dad's sister, my aunt, she lived in a council flat for many, many years and eventually bought it.
That's exactly what my parents did.
Yeah, and it's common for council flats to be on a council estate or a housing estate. So that's a collection of similar housing in one area.
If you live in an area where there are quite a few houses, but it's not a council estate, it's not a housing estate, it's not an area full of these houses built for people with low rent, then you would say a residential area.
Right.
It's similar idea, just the houses are going to be better quality, probably, and the average income per person is probably going to be more in the residential area.
Yeah. And it's important to notice the difference between an area where people live, which would be a residential area, and an area full of factories and companies where people work, which would be an industrial estate. How do you say industrial estate in Spanish?
Polígono industrial.
Yeah. Now, there are other areas of cities and towns. For example, some areas that are closed to traffic where only pedestrians are allowed, people walking on foot, and they're commonly called a shopping precinct or a pedestrian precinct where no cars can pass. And centro comercial in British English is what?
I would say a shopping centre.
Are they shopping centres in Belfast? Is that what you call them?
Yeah.
Same in the UK. Same in Britain.
But what would the Americans call them?
They would call them a mall. M-A-L-L. I'm going to the mall. Or a shopping mall.
What about an area where they're building something but they haven't finished yet?
An area where they're building something would be a construction site in American English or a building site in British English. Now, in around some cities, there's an area of green countryside that's often protected. For example, around London, there is an area that it's prohibited to build houses and factories on. And what's that called?
The Green Belt.
Yeah, it's a belt or an area, a circle around the city that is fields and parks and trees and grass that cannot be built on. So there's a green belt around London, for example.
Mm-hmm. Of course, in Spain, they also have green belts as well.
Do they?
Yeah, they have green belts in Spain. But what tends to happen in the Valencia area is one politician gets friendly with another, money exchanges hands, and what was a green belt suddenly becomes an area which can be built on. But we'll leave that for another day. That's more politics.
It becomes a grey belt.
A grey area. We thought it was a green belt, but somebody made a lot of money and suddenly they built on it.
Yeah.
Around the edge of some cities, for example, around the edge of Madrid, and some cities in many countries of the world have shanty town. There's a small shanty town outside Madrid where gypsies live.
Is there? I didn't know that.
It's small.
I've obviously heard of the shanty towns in some Indian cities, and Rio de Janeiro has a very large shanty town, and some Latin American countries have shanty towns.
And in Africa, most cities have shanty towns. So they're kind of unofficial neighborhoods that shouldn't really exist, but they do exist. People have built there because they can't build anywhere else. They've made things out of bits of metal, bits of wood, plastic, whatever they can. They're called shanty towns. There's a very small one outside Madrid where gypsies live.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's a few more in Europe, I think. Not many, but plenty in other parts.
What would you call what's the collocation or the expression for things that you would find in a community to service the community? For example, sports centres, swimming pools, libraries, that kind of thing.
Local amenities?
Mm-hmm. Local amenities.
Amenities, or you could say facilities as well, I guess.
Yeah. Facilities. What are the local amenities or facilities like in your area?
What do you think are the most important or the most essential amenities in any city, Craig?
Well, I used to think it was a library, but these days, because of the internet, I don't think a library is that important anymore. I think community centres, places where people can meet and socialise together, they're very important. Obviously, sports facilities where people can exercise, and facilities for children, an area where children can play safely. That's obviously very important. And obviously health facilities and health amenities like clinics and that kind of thing are important.
So for you, your ideal urban area has plenty of amenities.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And also, would it be an area with a lot of nightlife, or would it be an area with a lot of bars and cafes, or would you like it to be a lot of shops? Would you like it to be a shopping area? Or would you prefer it to be a residential area or kind of a mixture? What's ideal for you?
Ideal for me personally, I'm not too concerned about shops. And although I live in an area with some bars and discos, I don't go there anymore. So that's not important to me. What is important, I think, is an area of relaxation, of parks and places to walk. Which I don't have here, so that's why I think I miss it. So, I'm happy that there's a sports center within walking distance. That's a very useful amenity for me. What about you?
Yeah, the same as you, really. Yeah, I look for the same things. Now, Craig, one area which I imagine you wouldn't like to live in, I suppose, is a red light district.
Well, let's explain what a red light district is. A place where you would find drugs and prostitution.
And that type of thing, yes. Yeah.
There's a big red light district in Amsterdam. There's a big red light. There's several red light districts in Bangkok, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What the Spanish call Barrio Chino.
Is that what they call Barrio Chino?
Yeah, okay. Red light district. However, there's another word in English, which is Chinatown.
Oh, that's different, though. Chinatown is just where Chinese businesses and people live together in one community.
Yeah. So don't confuse the two. Mm-hmm. Red Light District is Barrio Chino in Spanish. Why you say that, I have no idea.
So there's a Barrio Chino in Madrid, for example.
In every city, I'd say.
But is there a Chinatown in Madrid?
I'm not sure that there is.
Because there isn't one in Valencia.
No. There's no real entire neighborhood that you could say is nearly all Chinese, no.
There are many Chinese businesses here.
Yes.
But they're not in one particular area like in San Francisco, for example, or New York.
Yeah, San Francisco probably has the most famous Chinatown in the world, right?
Yeah.
A huge population of Chinese people. Mm-hmm. So don't confuse Red Light District and Chinatown. You might go looking to buy some Chinese product and you might get into big trouble if you pick the wrong one in English.
Some more expressions that could be useful when speaking about where you live. On the outskirts. What's that? Al borde or a las afueras? On the outskirts of...
Las afueras. Yeah.
Of a city or yep. town. Or in the suburbs. Mm-hmm. Or suburban, which is the adjective. So suburban area or suburban area. And then...
So there, that's not the center, but it's still in the city, right?
It's still in the city, but it's on the edge of the city.
Before the outskirts.
Exactly.
So you have the city center and then you go out and eventually you come to the suburbs. And once you leave the suburbs and you get out of the city, just at the edge, just outside is the outskirts.
Yeah. As you said, the city center is a UK British English expression, the city center. Mm-hmm. In America, they would probably say downtown. So downtown Madrid or downtown New York or downtown Washington, the center of the city. And in British English, the city center. Reza, do you mind if I tell our listeners about something we like?
Go ahead, Craig.
Of course, it's italki.com. Italki is an internet website where you can find a personal one-to-one teacher at very low cost. Why one-to-one? Well, there's that human connection with a real teacher. No software programs, no apps on your phone. It's a one-to-one class. And Reza, why do your students like one-to-one classes? Because you teach one-to-one sometimes.
Because it's the most personalized way to improve your English.
Yeah, it's very effective. You get a lot of talking time with your teacher, a lot of practice to improve your fluency. And you need to find the right teacher, but you can change your teacher until you find a teacher you feel comfortable with, until you find the right teacher for you. And Italki are offering a special deal to our listeners, 100 free Italki credits, which are called ITCs on their website. So when you sign up for their paid service, you get basically one free lesson. How do you find it? Go to inglespodcast.com/italki, Italki. Reza and I want to thank Italki for sponsoring Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig.
Craig, have you ever seen any slums on your travels?
Yes, I have seen a few slums, mainly in India and in some parts of Asia. And as we said before, speaking about shanty towns, unfortunately, shanty towns do have slum housing, mm-hmm. which tend to be below the poverty line, very difficult conditions, sometimes with no running water, often with no electricity. And very difficult conditions.
Mm-hmm. Although slums don't necessarily have to be shanty towns, in the United Kingdom there were slums until the 1920s or 30s. There were mm-hmm. slums in parts of London and Glasgow and other areas. There were areas of cities where only extremely poor people lived and the facilities were very, very, very poor. They were called slums. So you can have city slums. Or the slums could be in a shanty town, which is outside the city. Could be either.
Right. If you don't have a house or a flat, if you do not have a roof over your head, un techo, Then it's common to sleep rough. To sleep rough, R-O-U-G-H, is to sleep on the street, to sleep with no housing.
When you're homeless.
When you're homeless, exactly.
Have you ever crashed on someone's floor?
Crashed on someone's floor? Yes.
What does that mean? You better explain that.
You don't plan to sleep outside of your house, or you don't plan to sleep in a place, but because of certain situation, you just sleep on the floor until the next morning. So, for example, you go to a party and you realize you're too drunk to drive home or too drunk to get home, and you say to your friend or to your mate, hey, can I crash? Which means, can I crash on your floor? Can I sleep on your floor until the morning, or can I crash on your sofa? So it's something not planned.
Right. And if you're lucky, then your mate will put you up. They will give you free accommodation.
We've had this phrasal verb before, to put someone up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To give them a bed for the night or a sofa for the night.
Craig, you own your own accommodation. You own your own flat. But if you had to pay money every month to live in a place, how would you say that?
Then I'm paying rent. I'm renting a flat. I'm renting a house or an apartment. And if you have your own second home, it's possible to rent out your home or your flat or your house to another person.
What do you call this person who rents out, who lets another person stay in their second property?
You could say that they're a landlord or a landlady, if they're a woman. Mm-hmm. And the person who pays the rent is the tenant. So the tenant, T-E-N-A-N-T, rents the flat. And the landlord or landlady rents out the flat. So that's a phrasal verb, to rent out property. Let's finish our vocabulary with some adjectives describing houses, accommodation, or towns and cities. Run down, what does that say to you, Reza? If I say it's a run down area, it's a run down property.
It needs work done in it. It has deteriorated. It's not to the standard that it used to be. So, for example, slum areas are run down. You could also say they're shabby.
De mal estado.
Shabby, yeah, they just don't look good. They're not being looked after.
Yeah.
They look depressing.
Have you ever lived in a rundown area?
No, I wouldn't say so. Although the area where I live in Valencia, some people used to consider it slightly rundown, but then the council renovated it. They did a lot of work to fix it, and now it looks a lot better.
They did it up. We've had that phrasal verb as well.
They did it up, yeah. So it was
to do something up.
It wasn't very run down. It was slightly run down, but they fixed it.
It's very nice, your area now. It's very lively. It has a lot of life. A lively area has a lot of life. And I'd also say, especially at weekends, your area is bustling.
It's bustling, yes.
It's bustling. Lots of people, lots of people eating outside, people going out, enjoying themselves, having coffee.
It's lively. There's a lot of life in the streets. Mm-hmm. Just so people know, and a bit of free publicity, it's the area, the neighborhood of Ruzafa or Ruzafa in Valencia, which is becoming an area which is well known for its nightlife. But when I first moved there, as I say, it wasn't at all. It was slightly run down. So it has transformed.
In fact, it's only really transformed and been a hub or a center. Hub, H-U-B, means a center for nightlife since Reza moved there.
That's probably the reason.
So I think that could be the reason.
Yeah, people must have heard Reza's there, you know, this world-famous podcaster.
The word got around. The word got around, and now it's a bustling, lively, picturesque. Picturesque? What's picturesque?
Picturesque. It would make a nice picture.
Yeah.
And very cosmopolitan.
Attractive.
Cosmopolitan, wouldn't you say? Lots of people of different nationalities, visitors, foreigners who live there, as well as the visitors. Very cosmopolitan.
It is very cosmopolitan. I like it very much, your area.
And it's very prosperous. Businesses are doing well there because a lot of people come there for the nightlife, to eat out in restaurants, etc. that they're making money, that it's prosperous.
Mm-hmm. And it's also another adjective. It's also an inner city area, which means it's inside the city. It's an inner city area. Musafir is an inner city area.
Mm-hmm.
More adjectives, negative adjectives. You could say that an area or a property is dull, depressing.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever been anywhere in the world that you thought was a bit dull or depressing?
Have I been anywhere in the world that I thought was dull and depressing? I can't think of anywhere. I'm sure I have, but I can't think at the moment of parts of India when I was there. Parts of India were quite depressing because of mainly of the poverty.
Depressing, yes, but were they dull?
No, they weren't dull. They were lively. There was a lot happening, lots of life, and they're very colourful areas. But because of the poverty I saw, it was a bit depressing.
Lots of homeless people in the streets, I guess.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Reza, if you had to choose between life in the city or living in the country, would you describe yourself as a city person or a country person? Where would you prefer to live?
It's a hard question, Craig. I'm a bit of both. I'm not attracted to big cities. I never have been. I wouldn't like to live in a big city.
Is that why you didn't choose? You chose Salamanca and Valencia and not Barcelona and Madrid?
Exactly. No offense to anyone who lives there. They're beautiful cities, as indeed is London, and I'm sure Sao Paulo and, you know,
Mexico City
and Buenos Aires are as well. I'm sure they are to visit, but I wouldn't like to live in a big city myself. I like living in small cities, and Valencia is a nice size. It's just under 1 million inhabitants. It's a perfect size. You can get around, that means travel easily. You can travel from the inner city to the suburbs, to the outskirts in 15 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
I really like that.
Yeah, me too.
It's not too crowded. There's plenty of space.
So you don't see yourself as a country person living in a small village in the middle of nowhere, very rural?
Even though I like Valencia because it's a small city, even then I like to get away from the people sometimes. So I do like life in the countryside as well. I have a suspicion that when I'm older, I'll probably move to the countryside when I've seen enough of the city and I can say, I've been there, I've done that, got the T-shirt.
I'd be careful about that if I were you.
No, what do you mean?
Well, it's when you get older, when you retire, that you need to be close to a hospital, that you need to be close to medical facilities, that it's more difficult for you to move around, that you need things on the doorstep, that it's nice to have a supermarket next to your flat.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe I could move to a small town rather than the countryside. A small town somewhere with, let's say, 20,000 people or 30,000 people, it might have a hospital or something nearby and the basic amenities. That might be.
I think that will be probably better than living in a country cottage miles from anywhere in a farmhouse that's very far from civilization.
Yeah, I think you're right. You get a nice balance that way.
And also, I think it's nice to be in a smaller caring community, because cities can be very impersonal, and it can be quite difficult to relate to people in busy cities.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in a smaller town community, I think there's more contact between people.
They do say, people who investigate, people who research this type of thing, say that the loneliest people in the world are found in the biggest cities, strangely. People who feel the loneliest.
I can believe that, yeah.
So you might be living in a city surrounded by 5, 10, 15 million people, could be Tokyo, for example, but you feel quite lonely because although all those people are around you, they don't have any reason to talk to you or be particularly close to you. Whereas in a small town, people more or less have to be nice to you. You have to be nice to each other. There's no choice because you know everybody. If somebody is not nice to you, you're going to bump into them the next day. People will know that that person is not nice. So you're kind of forced to be nice to each other, don't you think?
Yeah, I do. And they're very nosy. I think people in smaller communities, they like to know what you're doing. They like to talk and gossip about you. And, if you like that or not, it's definitely there's definitely a feeling of community in a smaller town. So you've said that you lived in a council house. Can you speak a little bit more about where you lived when you were growing up in Belfast? What was the area like? What amenities did it have? What was your street like? Can you describe it?
Quite a strange street in a way, because the city bus service ended in my street. It was the very last stop. And that kind of tells you a little bit about my street. So it felt like what it was, kind of the outskirts of the city. So the bus got to my area just about, but didn't go any further. So if I walked one direction down my street, I was walking into a more urban, more built up area the more I walked. But if I walked the other direction, within 10 minutes, I came across cows in fields.
So there was a green belt around Belfast.
Yes, and I was just at the start of the green belt. So really, within 10 minutes, I could see cows.
Sounds quite nice, because you had the best of both worlds.
In a way, yeah, that's true. There was a school right in front of my house, which sadly closed a couple of years ago, and they demolished it.
They knocked it down.
So now we're wondering what they're going to do with the space, because it was a school with sports facilities, with a football pitch and other facilities right in front of my house. So lots of nice open space, which was nice. Mm-hmm. But now I'm afraid they're going to build houses there now that there's no school. That's unfortunate. I hope they don't. Nobody really wants more houses to be built in their area, do they? Most people prefer to have an open space or green area in front of them.
And did you have good amenities close to you?
Yeah, apart from the school, there were a few local shops. No supermarket. I had to go about 10, 15 minutes away to get to a supermarket. But local shops, post office, and a GP, a doctor's surgery. So yeah, we had all the basics. Mm-hmm. What about your area?
Growing up, I lived in the suburbs of London, and there were local amenities. There was a local library that I used to go to quite a lot. There was a community centre that I used to go to as a kid to play football, and used to go to the discos and meet friends there. It wasn't very close to the school, because I remember my mum used to take me every morning and bring me back every afternoon, because the bus service wasn't very good. But it was well connected to the centre of London by underground, by tube. And there was a local swimming pool, some shops, and the town, the main town, was a bus ride away. So you could walk there in half an hour or 10 minutes on the bus, and you had lots of shops and department stores and the mainline train station, which connected most of the UK. So yeah, it was a nice area. It was quite green. There were trees. It was quite suburban, but it wasn't like the centre of London with everything that goes with it. So half an hour from the centre, not in the country. I liked it. It was nice, nice and quiet.
Sounds like it had a good balance.
And we lived in, as I said before, a semi-detached house.
I got one more question for you, Craig. Spain underwent a crisis recently. There are a lot of...
We're still in it,
but there are a lot of half-built areas which were supposed to be new urban areas, but the money ran out, there was a financial crisis, the banks couldn't pay any more money to the builders, or the building company closed, and there are these ghost towns. A ghost town is a town where nobody lives. Perhaps because they left, something happened, or perhaps they never finished it. By the way, it's also very noticeable in Ireland. In Ireland, there are a lot of ghost towns for exactly the same reason.
So they're houses that have been half built and half finished and just left because the money ran out.
Yeah. Or maybe there are a few unlucky people living there because they bought the houses right at the beginning, but then no more neighbours moved in because they didn't quite finish it. So those people are stuck there in half-built houses. Or there might be nobody at all. I'm sure you've seen a few in Spain, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think they should do with these areas? Do you think they should finish them? Or do you think they should just demolish them and say, okay, we'll make it a green belt area, or what can we do?
Well, very often I think they're built by private companies, and the problem is, because it's not government finance, the problem is if there's no money to be made, or if the company is losing money, then there's no way they're going to carry on building properties. I think the only thing to do is to wait until the economy improves and picks up again, and then I hope with the rise in house prices that people will invest more in building and developing more amenities, and then the area will naturally build up again. But I think in times of crisis, then you just have to wait. I don't think the government are going to step in and improve the area.
Mm-hmm. One final question for you. Do you prefer modern, gleaming, that's shining, tall buildings, very impressive in a city? Or do you like older, more quaint, but perhaps more run-down, but more historic areas of a city with more character, but not as comfortable as the new gleaming areas? Which do you prefer?
I think when buildings are well conserved and well preserved and correctly restored, then it's beautiful. And I definitely think that should be the way that cities keep their character. But unfortunately, and I've seen here in Valencia in some areas that the houses are very run down, that there's no money to invest in them. And in that case, I think it can be a bad area to live in health-wise. So I think in that case, then they should be modernized and taken down. And it's really, really sad when that happens. But I think it gets to a stage where you just have to, for the sake of the people that live there, then you have to give them better housing.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I think the same as you, from what I understand. I would rather restore, I would rather return those old buildings to their former, to their previous glory, than demolish them and build new buildings which won't have as much character and won't be as good quality. Everybody knows that buildings in Europe, anyway, built 80, 100 years ago were generally much better quality than what they build today, because they just don't have the money to buy those kind of materials these days.
Mm-hmm.
So I prefer to restore if possible rather than to demolish and build characterless buildings. Let's see what happens in the Cabanyal in Valencia, just down the road where that very question, it's about 5 minutes from where we are now, that very question is being answered as we being thought about as we speak.
Yeah, well, that's a different question, because that could destroy a whole community. That's a road that's going through a whole community and basically dividing it, which I'm definitely against. So, I mean, it's not that the houses are falling down and they're dangerous for the people living there. That's just property speculators and developers trying to make money and, as a result, dividing a community and destroying what is a thriving, healthy community, which is really, really sad. But having said that, I would much prefer... I used to like houses with character and old buildings, but having lived in some when I was a lot poorer... and suffering damp walls and plumbing that doesn't work and no hot water, I like houses that are functional. I like to have a roof that doesn't leak. I like to have windows that fit properly. I like to have heating and things that work, and plumbing and electric that works in the house. Mm-hmm. So I would happily sacrifice the beauty of an old building that isn't functional for a more modern building that's more comfortable. But maybe that's my age.
Yeah. Craig, you just touched on something I think is really important. You hit the nail on the head. That means...
Acertado.
Acertado. The most important thing of all, community spirit, you mentioned it. That's the most important thing, I think, for any area where you live, be it a big city, a village, or a country area, or a small town, it doesn't matter. I think if there's a good community spirit, things should be okay.
Absolutely. So how would you describe the area that you grew up in? And how would you describe the area you're living in now? Use some of the vocabulary we've spoken about in this episode and send us a voice message or an email at our webpage, inglespodcast.com. You could also speak about your preference, preferring city life or country life, which would you prefer? And how would you describe your ideal urban area? So practice your English and send us a voice message. Thank you for listening, and until next episode, it's a huge, wonderful and sunny goodbye from Craig.
And it's bye-bye. Bye from me as well. Craig's just leaving me now. He's going back to his mansion, his English mansion.
Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in next week's episode. The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later.